everybody, just take a minute. All right? Look around. Prettiness up here. I mean, not me, but behind me. Okay? Just, I mean, think about this. All right? Stores are closed except for Casey's. Okay? And, you know, every year we go through this thing. It's not too late to get her a gas card, guys. She'll appreciate it. Everything that's, you know, going to be baked or burned or however it is you do at your house, it's done. And so it's just time. And it's just time to sit and to ponder how God would come down and become one of us and why. And that is the reason for the season, and that's why we're here. I mean, unless your family drug you, we understand that, and that's fine. You know, you're welcome. You can stay for dinner, too, in case you need to. But we are people who are just overawed by this Jesus and what he has done for us. And what he has done for us in becoming like us, in dying the death we were supposed to die, and rising to new life so that we might live forever. And that living forever begins now. I can look at all the world and all my problems and all the challenges with an eternal perspective, because I know that this is not all there is. And like the song says, is Sinatra, the best is yet to come. And it's going to be wow. And all of that begins tonight, because in God's plan, this is the moment where heaven reaches down and touches earth. And he who is infinite made himself finite. He was born in human flesh like one of us. He who had equality with God did not count that as something to be held on to, but instead he emptied himself. And he took on the very form of a slave. And he became obedient, even to death, and even to death on a cross. And because of that, his name is great and celebrated in heaven and on earth and even in the pits of hell. That is what we believe and teach. And it's him, it's this Jesus who's made all the difference to us. It's why that this is a weird church that worships him in four languages, prays to him in 10. It's why there's used furniture that we collect for people in the lobby, and clothes and homeless stuff and just all kinds of exciting and miraculous and wondrous things. Because he makes all the difference. So, you know, I went to the Lord in prayer and I said, what are we supposed to tell the folks on Christmas Eve? And he says, what he always says, tell them about me. See, because that's the whole thing. It is all about him. Because when you are Jesus, when you are God incarnate, when you're the Son of God, when you have paid the price, when you are the gateway to everlasting life and eternity in the here and now, it can be all about you. And that's not boastful or prideful or anything. It's just real. And I'm so grateful to have a real Savior. A Savior who knows about my life, a Savior who's lived my life, a Savior who has overcome the temptations that I face. And so I prayed a little bit longer and these verses came, and so this has kind of become our theme for Christmas. And it's reflected on your bulletin. It's great. You look at it. In the middle, put your own picture. You can see the pictures behind me. This is it. It's about Jesus, who is the very form of the invisible God. I want to read these verses to you. They're in your bulletins too. There's Bibles there. You brought your own, maybe not on Christmas because you had a plate full of cookies with you in the other hand and it wouldn't balance. But Colossians, starting with chapter 1, verse 15 to 23, this is what Paul writes to us. He says, the Son, that's Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. In other words, anything you wanted to know about God the Father, you can see in Jesus the Son. If you ever think that God is strange, that God is far away, that God lives in light inaccessible, hid from your eyes, if you think it's impossible to know God, I just invite you. Look at Jesus. And Jesus says this. Once his disciples said to him, he said, when are you going to show us the Father? You know, it's like, come on, show us the real stuff. And what does Jesus say? He just says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Everything we want to know about God, Jesus tells us. And I'm sure you have more questions. Maybe after you've read the Gospels a couple of times, I'd start with John and just kind of read it through, because it's the most visual. It uses the most images. It's the easiest, I think. And, you know, you can read it easily in a week just by reading three chapters a day. It's not too hard. That's about 15 minutes. It's not hard. And as you start to understand him and the things that he says and get used to his language and you start hearing him, oh, I don't know, maybe you have other questions, but I'll tell you, maybe those questions don't mean as much as you think right now, because once Jesus has you, things kind of change, your perspective changes. And you start to live life with a confidence and a joy, a faith, a belief, a real trust that you're going to step out in faith and God's going to meet you there, and that there is nothing that you can't handle on planet Earth, no matter how good or how bad, because he's with you. And that's joy. So that's how we know who God is. The Son is the image of the invisible God who came and was born here for us. He goes on, he says, the firstborn over all creation, for in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness, the fullness of God. Can you imagine just an infinite God contained in a human being named Jesus? It defies logic, but that's who God is. And we'll get to that in a minute, because that's the exciting part. God defies logic all the time, because his thoughts are bigger than our thoughts, and his ways are higher than our ways. Do you get that? And that's the most amazing thing about Christmas. Is, my goodness, the fullness of God would come in and be born in a baby. That's boom! That blows the mind right there. That the fact, because I'll tell you something, I know what you're thinking, and that is, if I were God, I would not do it that way. I would do it differently. I would probably just come down and I'd stand on a platform like this and I'd just have groups of people coming, you know, I have angels pushing them in or whatever, and I'd say, sheep, goat, boom, you know, blue smoke, poof, okay, because, you know, that'd be it. And I'd solve all the world problems by eliminating horrible people. That's kind of what we do, isn't it? Typically, it's called genocide, and it's done by people who, you know, they have the best intentions if you agree with their twisted evil mind. That's how the world does things. It's not how God does things. God doesn't desire the death of the sinner. He desires that his sinners come to him and they be saved. They just be changed. That's an amazing thing about Jesus, isn't he? Walking down the road, and there's Zacchaeus. He's a tax collector. He rips off people. I mean, not only does he work for the IRS, but the man is a thief. It's just horrible. Can you imagine? He lives high on the hog while he's fleecing poor people. Middle class people, doesn't matter. They become poor people. Everybody ought to be poor in the presence of a tax collector like this, right? So all his ill-gotten gains, he's drinking and laughing and, you know, having the dancing girls and everything like this. And Jesus says, I'm going to your house tonight. And the crowd goes, because that's what religious people do. Every time Jesus comes, he draws near to sinners, because Jesus is irresistibly drawn to sinners. And I think the church has to be too if we're going to be the image of Christ. And he says, I'm going to your house for dinner tonight. And see, the thing is, it wasn't just any old ordinary dinner. It was a dinner that changed Zacchaeus' life and his eternity. And he went away from that encounter completely changed. And you see, that's what happens when you're in the presence of real Jesus. Sometimes I worry about us, because I think sometimes people don't go away changed. And I don't know why that is or whatever, but is it because it's not real Jesus enough? But that's what Jesus is. He converts people. Changes him. How does it work? Well, he gets inside of you and he helps you. He forgives you. It's one of the deepest needs psychologically that we have, to be forgiven and to be accepted. And if you've ever cried out to the God of the universe, you know, for that, accept me, forgive me, whatever, in Jesus, it's real in the flesh and blood, he does it. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile himself to all things, because everything was broken. And if you look around today, I mean, this is the weirdest thing. I feel like I have, like, Rumpelstiltskin. All right? No, seriously, you remember Rumpelstiltskin? He went to, had a nap, right? And would he wake up, and it was like hundreds of years later, right? Something like that. I don't know what happened to me, but I woke up, and it's like everything is broken. You used to be able to go to the store and get something, you know what I'm saying? And somebody was there to help you and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I could just go on and on in the most undignified rant that you ever heard a preacher go on to. I don't get why it's broken. You get in the car and you go down the street and it's all tore up and everything like that. And it's like, why didn't they let me know? why is it that everything just it's broken now? You don't know how to fix it. And I think, look, this is all just some sort of cosmic metaphor for where we are on planet Earth. It's busted, and we can't fix it ourselves. And so what happened? God comes down in the flesh, and he says, it's all right. Let me do the heavy lifting. I'm going to fix it for you. I'm going to fix the broken relationship that you, human, have with me, God, because you can't do everything perfect, and you'll never live up to my standard, and my justice requires that you therefore be punished. And in order not to circumvent my own justice so that I'm just a cheap guy who grades on a bell curve and goes in for favoritism, in order that I can be a God who you can trust, here's the deal. I'm going to pay your penalty for you. I'm going to reconcile you to me. And I'm going to do it by putting Christ on the cross. And he goes on, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. I mean, I think that's beautiful, and that's the gospel in a nutshell. I want to tell you something. This, I was thinking about this. I think a picture is worth 1,000 words. I'm thinking about Jesus, the image of the invisible God. You want 1,000 words about God? Look at Jesus. I was thinking about this picture. It defines a generation, doesn't it? I mean, this is Iwo Jima, right? And the flag's going up and everything. And we bronzed it, right? Because it is such a powerful image for a generation that is quickly passing away. There are other images, too, that just kind of stick in our mind. You with me? When I was a kid, it was this one, right? It was Vietnam. And it was that child running down the road, okay, surrounded by soldiers, scared out of her wits, right? And that kind of image changes a course of a war and influences public opinion. Images are powerful. I hate this one. It gives me the willies every single time, and I realize I haven't come to grips with this. I still am trying to work with Jesus through this, because this changed everything. That's the kind of world we live in, and it's scary, and that's why I'm glad I got a real Jesus to hold on to. Speedos. An image that will haunt you. I don't even have to say it. Y'all know what I'm going to say. Okay, so just get out of there. Okay, but you see what I mean? That's the power of image. Isn't it? You just have to even say it. And right away, oh, I crashed the PowerPoint just with that. It was just so much negative energy all at once. There was a cry that went up from the crowd. Oh, my gosh, and it shorted out the whole system. Oh, well, it's all right. We'll use sign language at 8 o'clock, but this is the thing. So I wanted to think, oh, thanks, there it is again, Speedo. Oh, well, quickly go on. I wanted to show you. Okay, images of Jesus in his life. And it's going to go like this. You're not going to believe it. You say, how did he do that in like 3.5 minutes? Well, here's the deal. What do you know about a God who's born in a stable? That's an image that ought to stick with you. And this is emblazoned everywhere. This is the God who we worship. And here's the thing. What do we know about him? We know that he loves the poor because he became one. We know that he doesn't like fanfare and ceremony, and he doesn't stand on glorification and all kinds of kingly adornments and all the rest of the stuff. Why? Because he was born in a stable. We know that he loves refugees. Why? Because he was one. We also know that everybody in his life, it seems, from the time that he was born, was trying to kill him, which is why he became a refugee in the first place and wound up ultimately through Egypt going back to a town called Nazareth. We know that he was tempted. And you and I are tempted every day. And it's the same stuff. It's what are you going to worship? Who are you going to follow? What's going to be first in your life? You're going to have power? And what kind of power are you going to have over other people? And let's face it, there are people in this world that's all they're concerned about is power. Because with power, you get control over finances, you get control over people, you get to decide who lives and who dies and all the rest of the stuff. Oh, my word, put it away. Let Jesus be in control. How about images of Jesus with little children? That's the kind of God that we have. And you know what's really funny is you are that child. Doesn't matter if you're 90 or 9 or 9 months, you are that child. That's how God looks at you. He wants you for his own. He wants you to come to him like a child, say, Daddy, open your arms, climb up on his great heavenly lap. This is what Jesus showed us. The God who's far away is very close. And this is the weirdest thing. He came down to earth to reconcile himself to you. I think that means that he's nuts about you, that he's crazy about you, not in a codependent sort of scary creeper kind of a way, but in the way that a father would seek after a child and find him because he's lost and he needs to come home. We talked about Zacchaeus and all the sinners that Jesus welcomed. Yeah, those are images. They ought to be burned onto our collective consciousness because that's the kind of God that we have. one who seeks and saves the lost. Oh, remember that your God washes feet. Now, this is the one where everybody gets hung up all the time, because here's the deal. Do you know what those guys did to Jesus after he washed their feet? Well, one of them sold him down the river, right? I mean, 30 pieces of silver, turned the man in, okay, for a prize. He betrayed him. Y'all ever been betrayed? Do you know what it feels like? Your God completely understands. The other thing is that the rest of those birds, they all ran away. There he goes, up on the cross. Worst moment of your life. You'd like to die with your family kind of sitting around you, right? I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work and everything. No, but they ran away because they didn't want to be next. Ooh, he gets the idea about being alone. And he gets the idea about people running away. And if you've ever had to take the blame for doing the right thing all by your lonesome, if you've ever suffered for what's right and true, if you've ever made a sacrifice because you love somebody, you know exactly who this God is. And he's crazy about you. And you see, he washes people's feet. He serves them. He gets down on his hands and knees. And you know, if that's my king, if that's my God, can you imagine what I need to live my life like? Because if he's washing feet, I don't know what I need to do. Scrub floors on my hands and knees. I need to be lower than that, because that's him, and that's his exalted position. And finally, he dies. Lays down his life, self-sacrifice. That's an image of God that you need to take with you. That's who he is. He's willing to suffer and die so that you can profit and live.